Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or simply hoping to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back. Today we're going to focus on the evaluation of autism spectrum disorders.
Right.
We've talked about sort of the diagnostic criteria. We've talked about the ever-growing prevalency rate and some of our thoughts about that. And today we're going to talk about how we typically assess and diagnose autism spectrum disorders.
Right.
So what?
It's become an important issue.
It is.
The disorder isn't really increasing,
right?
The identification of students is increasing,
right?
Not the real number of students, and I think that's an important issue, because when we think of real numbers increasing, then you start to look for an environmental cause or a genetic cause or something, and there probably isn't one.
Right.
It's probably a question of we're getting better at it. The other thing I think we mentioned in one of the other podcasts was that if your parents don't take you to regular pediatric well care visits, you're not going to be, that child won't be screened for autism.
Right.
And one of the things that we think is happening is that more children are being taken in for screening,
right,
especially minority children, as healthcare changes.
Right.
As much as we complain about the Affordable Care Act, it got more children in for services. And as more children get evaluated, more children are going to be identified.
Right.
Okay. So it may be that there's been an increase in the identification among certain segments of the population.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. But the screening process, I mean, because this process begins in the pediatrician's office.
Right.
The early screening.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we'll begin there, because the first step, I suppose, in the evaluation, typically in the evaluation of autism spectrum disorder, includes those early developmental screenings.
That's right.
And that's when, you know, the physician, usually the pediatrician, will be evaluating, you know, during the well baby checks, and, you know, when they're getting immunization shots and things like that, they will be checking for various developmental milestones.
Right.
And so we're looking at like 9 months and 18 months and up to,
that's right,
you know, 2 years.
And they're referred to as well baby visits.
Right.
Because the baby is not in crisis.
Right.
The parent has no specific concerns. So you take the baby into the pediatrician at different ages for immunizations, to prevent diseases that we have immunizations for.
Right.
And the second reason is to make sure the baby is developing normally.
Right.
Okay. So those are the two things we're doing. So that's why I go back to that concept of, but somebody has to lay their eyes and hands on this baby to know that development is proceeding as it should.
Right. Someone who is familiar with development.
Right.
So, and it is through those well baby checks and those early developmental screenings that, you know, kids may be identified if they're having any delays. Usually, as we talked about on Monday, delays in social development, delays in language, delays or some, you don't really see the behavioral stereotypic like behaviors.
No.
You don't see those during these early developmental years, but you will see some of the social and communication sort of social communication limitations that should be present early on. And many times what the physician will then do is refer the little one to like an early steps or a different regions call them different things, but in our region we call it early steps, and it's the birth through three program.
That's right.
Through the Individuals with Disability Education Act, it's part C of IDEA, and those children are then evaluated by a team that looks at overall cognitive development, language development, physical development, and so on.
Right, because when a baby is brought into the pediatrician, the pediatrician typically checks five areas. I mean, we're always, when we talk about development, we're talking about development in five areas. That's gross motor development, which is muscles of movement and posture, fine motor development, hands and mouth, cognitive development, speech and language development, and social emotional development.
Right.
So you look at those five areas across the ages.
Right.
And typically those begin to occur at about 9 months. We begin to, because then the baby has enough of a repertoire to evaluate those five things.
Right.
So the evaluations for the developmental screenings that will eventually identify children who may have autism begin at about 9 months of age.
Yeah.
Okay. And so it's recommended that the evaluations occur at, what is it, 9?
9, 18, 24, 30. And then at 36 months, when the baby turns 3, or the toddler, then toddler turns 3.
Toddler.
The transition will go to Part B from IDEA, and they'll start receiving services in the schools.
Right, and you mentioned IDEA, which is a law that was first passed in 1975.
Right.
It was then called the Education of All Handicapped Children Act. And then over time, its name changed, and now it's called
the Individuals with Disability Education Act.
And it has several parts.
Right.
The part that we're most familiar with is Part B, which is what happens
school.
In school-age children.
3 years to 21.
3 to 21, okay. What we're talking about now is Part C, which is the birth to 3.
Right.
And some states, most states separate, and some other organization other than K-12 takes care, addresses the needs of children from birth to 3.
Right.
And usually it's the health department.
Right.
And so we're talking about Part C of IDEA.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
So you do these screenings, and you're really looking for the biggest changes that we see occurred about 18 months of age. Okay.
Right.
Because at that point, a child should be actually running.
Right.
Not just walking. They should be walking, running, talking,
climbing.
They should have words, climbing. So they have enough of a behavioral repertoire at 18 months of age to say, wow, this child is really developing exactly as we hoped she would, or I see some delays.
By 18 months, by 18 to 24 months, the child should go from using one word commands, you know, cookie,
following.
No,
you
know, just using one word to communicate an entire thought, you know, cookie means, can I have a cookie, please?
May I please have a cookie?
To cookie, please. So it'll transition to two words. So by two, you should have two words.
Two-word utterances. You should have
two-word
about
phrases.
250 words.
Right.
But you should be but that child should be making two-word, you know, all gone, you know.
Me outside.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, those kinds of things. So, and if there's delays in that, then of course the developmental specialist or the pediatrician would likely recognize that. Now, as the child gets older, then we're going to start talking about more comprehensive evaluations. And you know, don't get us wrong, a comprehensive evaluation can occur before the age of 3. But, you know, typically the way that the pattern goes is the way that we're describing it here. So
right. And I like the distinction they make in this article.
From the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Because they say, and I think rightly, that autism spectrum disorders can be detected at 18 months.
Right.
You can begin to see some behavioral patterns. The diagnosis, however, probably won't occur until 2 or later.
Right.
Because you have to confirm. There can be many reasons why a child is behind at 18 months. But you can begin to identify. So I think that at 18 months, you can identify. At 24 months, you can diagnose.
Right. Yeah, there was a really interesting study done probably a decade ago or so where they took videos from a child's first birthday. So birthday one, they have a video of the birthday party, and all the children were later diagnosed with either autism or intellectual disability. Mm-hmm. And they randomly kind of mixed them up without any identifiers and gave them to a group of people to review. And those people who did not know the children in any way had to predict based upon the behavior, whether the child would later be diagnosed with autism or intellectual disability, mm-hmm. and they were able to correctly identify those kids who would later be diagnosed with autism
at one year of age.
Now that's looking at the behavior, you know, in a pretty controlled, with a very specific mm-hmm. purpose. And right. so, you know, it's really difficult at one to make that diagnosis based upon observations. But it can be done, you know, in some right. controlled settings.
You don't have a specialist looking for it
right.
in most one-year-olds.
Right.
Okay. That's right.
Right. So, those early signs are there, mm-hmm. but it's difficult to identify like sort of a priori before the diagnosis is made. It's right. difficult to mm-hmm. say, oh, well, that's what we're looking at
right.
Otherwise.
So what the American Academy of Pediatrics is saying in their official documents is that children are seen at 9, 18, and 24 months, 24 or 30 months, somewhere in that range, for developmental delay.
Right.
Okay. From 18 to 24 months and beyond, now you begin looking for right. ASD, autism spectrum disorder, specifically.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that 18-month mm-hmm. marker is an yeah. important time for screening.
Right.
For screening. And screening is different from diagnosis.
Right. So when it comes to diagnosis, there are a number of different tools that we can use to make right. a diagnosis. And I think it's important to note that, you know, from my experience, and I think that you share the same experience, many instruments that we use and many instruments that are very commonly used to diagnose or to look for symptoms of autism and autism spectrum disorders are very sensitive in that there's a high risk, in my opinion, there's a very high risk of false positives.
Over-identifying.
Because the way that most of these, and again, you have to recognize that, you know, a lot of these tests are questionnaires, mm-hmm. and it'll ask the parent, you know, does he do this, does she do that, right. and so on. Mm-hmm. And there are a number of reasons why a child may do any of those things.
Right.
And if we use any of those simple rating scales as a diagnostic tool, we're going to over-identify simply because, you know, if there are five different reasons that a kid could present with a particular behavior,
right.
and on this rating scale, that particular behavior is attributed to ASD, mm-hmm. then all kids that fall into all five of those diagnostic categories right. are going to be identified as ASD.
And we would rather over-identify.
That's what
I would rather say yes, your child's at risk, or yes, and be wrong,
right?
Than to miss
right.
a child who has it,
right?
So, in my practice, I would rather over-identify
right.
until we're absolutely certain.
Which again goes back to our discussion yesterday about the increased prevalence.
That's right,
because it could be that willingness to over-identify, that, you know, that preference to over-identify as opposed to under-identify
right.
is going to increase the number of diagnoses that are
yeah,
made.
Yeah, because, and this happened to me once, years ago. I was working with a family, and their son was presenting with some of these early language delays, mm-hmm. but he was young. He was younger than two, or maybe about two. And I didn't want to alarm the parents, mm-hmm. about, because this was a significant,
right.
this was 15 years ago,
okay.
so it was a little bit different then than it is today. And I didn't want to alarm the parents, but it turned out that the child did have autism,
mm-hmm.
and I always wish that I would have erred
mm-hmm.
and said, yes, let's assume,
right,
and let them deal with their grief, and let them mm-hmm. deal with their feelings, because that child would have got, as it turned out, the child got the services anyway,
because right.
the parents were concerned, and so they went on and got some language
right.
therapy, and then that led to a diagnosis by a developmental pediatrician about
right.
a year later. So he did get services starting at about age 3.
Right.
But since then, I've always said, let the adults deal with it,
right.
because this child might need services, and the sooner he gets them, the
right.
better.
And the strategy that I tend to take is not too dissimilar, in that I will say, we have, I'll make a statement, something to the effect of, you know, your child presents with a lot of symptoms that
right.
look like
right.
ASD. And I'll say, you know, these are those symptoms that look like ASD. Mm-hmm. And if there are symptoms that, you know, are counter to ASD mm-hmm. diagnosis, I'll say, you know, at the same time, you know, he has these symptoms that aren't consistent with ASD.
Right.
Say, so, you know, we need to look at how this pattern develops over time. In the meantime, let's err on the side of caution exactly. and go ahead and start working towards making that, you know, getting those services and supports available so that if it eventually goes in either direction, you know, the services are going to be helpful regardless of what the eventual diagnosis is.
I think most of us agree that if I'm going to err, I would rather err for the child.
Right. Err on the side that's going to get the services needed.
Exactly.
Right.
I don't want to err and miss the diagnosis. I'd rather err and be wrong.
Right.
You know, say, okay, yeah, I was wrong.
Right.
But at least the child got what she needed.
Right. Mm-hmm. Some other diagnostic things include, you know, sometimes physicians will refer for genetic testing to rule out things like Fragile X mm-hmm. and some other chromosomal or genetic types of mm-hmm. difficulties that could mimic ASD symptoms. But when we get into a scenario where we're really going to do a diagnostic evaluation, mm-hmm. we start looking at it. There's a couple of instruments that are sort of the gold standard when it comes to it. So this is beyond sort of those general questionnaires that you know providers will give to parents to fill out and those kinds of things. And those include two specific instruments.
Right.
One is the ADIR, and that's the Autism Diagnostic Interview Revised. And the other is the ADOS, the Autism Diagnostic Observation System, second edition, too. Those two, especially when used together, mm-hmm. are really strengthen your ability to make an accurate diagnosis.
That's right.
The ADOS actually, the ADOS 2, actually involves the examiner with the child mm-hmm. individually playing in a sort of a semi-structured controlled setting so that specific behaviors can be you know sort of triggered or elicited to see if the child responds with the appropriate behavior or not. The ADIR, the Autism Diagnostic Interview, is a lengthy interview mm-hmm. Between the examiner and the parent with the child not present. And this, you know, that interview can take a couple of hours sometimes because it gets extremely specific.
Very specific, very detailed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Both instruments require a great deal of training. You know, we have someone here in our office who's been trained on with them, and you know, the training was over a couple of days, mm-hmm. and she had to do a number of things to demonstrate proficiency. Right. So,
and the reason we talk about an interview and an observation mm-hmm. is because in our field, because we're making clinical diagnoses, there's no lab test for autism.
Right.
Okay, it's based on observation. Whenever we do an assessment, we want to do what's called a multimodal assessment, which is you never rely on a single instrument to make a diagnosis.
Right.
It's too important to decision to say, well, you got the. It doesn't matter whether it's a mental impairment, a cognitive impairment, a motor impairment. You have to have multiple informants.
Right.
And multiple instruments.
Mm-hmm.
And so with the autism diagnosis, you know, if we're doing developmental screening, a single pediatrician can do that.
Right.
That's screening.
Right.
But if you're doing a diagnosis, you have to move to another, up to a multimodal, multi-informant format. Mm-hmm. And so you have to talk to the parent.
Right.
That's the interview, so you get the parent's opinion. Then you have a trained observer.
Right. To actually see the child.
To actually look at the child and do those evaluations. And in our office, you have a third person,
mm-hmm.
you or I, typically another psychologist,
mm-hmm.
Looking at the child and also making a diagnosis based on history. So we have three different things mm-hmm. Going on to make sure that we're not missing anything and that we are getting it right.
Right. Okay?
And that's what you should be looking for. It's not a single test. It's not a single person. You have to have a number of people, mm-hmm. including the parents, doing a careful observation and history.
Yeah, absolutely. So it does require a lot of effort, a lot of time.
That's right.
And much of that is to rule out other possible causes, because of course communication disorders and pragmatic disorders and, you know, all kinds of different things, social anxiety disorder, for that matter, can result in symptoms very consistent with autism spectrum disorders.
Because frequently what happens is that students will brought, you know, we're talking this morning about, we can identify autism characteristics at 18 months, we can make a diagnosis at age 2 or 3. We frequently don't get children here until they're 10 or 11 years old.
Right.
And the issue is, does this child have autism spectrum disorder?
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, what's happening is that somebody said, maybe your child has autism.
Right.
Okay. Maybe what your child is doing is symptomatic of autism.
Right.
Okay. So then the child comes in years later, okay? And so what we're obliged to do then is not only to rule in or rule out autism, but also to think of the many other reasons why a child would be would be functioning this way. I didn't even have breakfast this morning. Would be functioning this way, because at age 10 or 11, there are many, many reasons why a child could be displaying these sorts of, so it's not just to rule out autism, it's also to consider everything else that the child might have.
Absolutely.
So it takes time and effort.
So the bottom line is that the assessment of autism spectrum disorder is a complex, comprehensive undertaking that requires more than just a questionnaire, more than just talking to somebody. You know, yes, absolutely. There are times when, you know, it doesn't take much to say, yeah, we should really think about diagnosis because the signs and symptoms are very apparent. But it doesn't negate the need for a comprehensive evaluation just to make sure.
Yeah. And there are two other points worth making here, is that there are some other instruments that are out there besides the ADIR and the ADOS. One of them is the autism... CARS and the GARS.
Oh, right.
They're called CARS and GARS. What these are simply, does the child
those are
have
the questionnaires.
The symptoms?
Those are the questionnaires we were talking about earlier.
Does the child have the symptoms? Maybe and maybe not.
Right.
But that doesn't render a diagnosis.
Right.
And the other thing that it doesn't do, the other thing that we should be doing, is that we should be looking at other domains of development. We should be looking at cognition. We should be looking at language. We should be looking and considering other things. In this article, and we don't have to go over it here, but there's a section called myths. There's five or six myths that are mentioned in a box in this article, and so I would say to readers to go ahead and look at those. I don't see it in this one, but it's somewhere in there.
Okay.
And so take a look at this article. And when you peruse it, when you open up all the links, you'll find one that says myths, and that's important. But I think the important thing is here begins with screening, usually done by a pediatrician early, and it moves on to diagnosis, which has to be multi-informant, multimodal.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So before we go today, we wanted to announce if you live in our area, which is the sort of the Central Florida area, a local group, it's Theater Winter Haven, is doing hosting a Coming Out of the Darkness Concert of Hope, and this is going to be on Thursday, May 24th at 7:30 p.m. And it is a program that is all about, you know, focusing on suicide prevention awareness, and it is it looks like a great event. It's put together, written, and directed by Norm Small, and it's going to be featuring the best of Central Florida talent, and it's all the proceeds from this event are going to go to some of the local suicide prevention programs and community-based mental health service providers like Peace River Center and things like that. So if you are in this area, definitely go and check this out, because it's going to be really, I think, a really good program.
And if you have school-age children, that's either their last day of school,
yeah,
or they're next to the last day of school for
right.
the school year. So it's either, most schools are going to close for the summer recess either on Thursday the 24th or Friday the 25th. Then it's Memorial Day weekend.
Yes.
So you have a little time here. I'd take advantage of that time and add this to your list of things to do over the Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah. We will have a post on our social media mm-hmm. sites, you know, YouTube. Well, not on YouTube, I suppose, but on Facebook and Twitter and some of those things so that you can, you know, get some additional information.
You know, we had a lot of emphasis on suicide not long ago mm-hmm. because of the TV program.
Right.
Okay. That TV program is now coming back.
Right.
Okay.
It's going to go season two.
Second
yeah.
season. So we will be returning to this topic of
right.
suicide. It certainly isn't over yet. This is probably something worth doing.
Absolutely.
If you're in the area.
Absolutely.
So come to Winter Haven.
Check it out.
Yeah.
And again, check out our Facebook page and our Twitter page. We will have the little graphic
Correct.
That they sent to us.
Right.
We'll have that up there for you to see that. All right. That is it for today. Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid. Thanks for sharing this episode of the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you will find all of our previous podcasts and much more. We would be honored if you would become a patron through patreon.com, where any donation you can manage will go to the development and creation of more content. Just visit patreon.com/themental breakdown for more information. Thanks again for listening, have an awesome day, and we look forward to being back in your feed tomorrow morning.